Otis gave his bells a jolly jingle. "We'd better hurry along to our deaths. 5 minutes isn't much time, even for Thor's chariot. Hop aboard." Hopping wasn't possible for Sam or Alex in their wedding dresses. I had to pull them up, which neither of them enjoyed, judging from the muttering and cursing behind their veils. The goats took off at a full gallop, or whatever it is goats do. Canter? Trot? Strut? At the edge of the parking lot, the chariot went airborne. We jingled as we flew from the restaurant like Taco Claus's sleigh, bringing cheesy gordita crunches to all the good little boys and girls and giants. The goats picked up speed. We cut through a cloud bank at 1,000 miles per hour, the cold mist slicking back my hair and wilting my shirt frills. I wished I'd had a veil like Sam and Alex, or at least some goggles. I wondered if Jack could make like a windshield wiper. Then, just as quickly, we began to descend. Below us spread the white mountains, rolling gray ridges with veins of white where the snow clung to life in the crevices. Otis and Marvin dive-bombed one of the valleys, leaving my internal organs up in the clouds. Stanley, the horse, would have approved. Sam did not. She clutched the railing and muttered, "Minimums, guys. Watch your approach speed." Alex snickered. "Don't be a backseat pilot." We landed in a forested ravine. The goats trotted onward, snow churning around the chariot wheels like thickening ice cream. Otis and Marvin didn't seem to mind. They forged ahead, jingling and exhaling steam, pulling us deeper into the shadow of the mountains. I kept watching the ridges above us, hoping to spot some Acer and Inharyar hidden in the brush, ready to help should something go wrong. I would have loved to see the glint of TJ's bayonet, or Halfborn's painted berserker face, or hear a bit of Gaelic cursing from Mallory. But the woods seemed empty. I remembered what Utgard Loki had said. That killing us and taking the Skofnung sword would be much easier than letting us go through with the wedding plans. "Hey guys, how do we know Thrym isn't a fan of, option one?"
"He wouldn't kill us," Sam said. "Not unless he has to. He wants this marriage alliance with Loki, which means he needs me, I mean her, Samira." She pointed to Alex.
Marvin tossed his horns as if trying to dislodge his bells. "You guys worried about an ambush? Don't be. Wedding parties are guaranteed safe passage."
"True," Otis said, "though the giants could always kill us after the ceremony, I hope."
"You mean you guess," Marvin said. "Not you hope."
"Hmm? Oh, right."
"Let's be quiet now," Marvin groused. "We don't want to cause an avalanche."
The possibility of a spring avalanche seemed unlikely. There wasn't that much snow on the sides of the mountains. Still, after all we'd been through, it would be pretty stupid to get buried under a ton of frozen debris in this snazzy tuxedo. Finally, the chariot drew up to a cliff face about 10 stories tall. Sheets of ice glazed the rocks like a curtain of sugar. Underneath, the waterfall was slowly coming back to life, gurgling and shifting and pulsing with light.
"Bridal Veil Falls," Alex said. "I went ice climbing here a couple of times."
"But not in a wedding dress," I guessed. "Or maybe I hoped. Otis had confused me."
"What do we do now?" Sam wondered.
"Well, it's been 4 minutes, Marvin said. "We're not late."
"Be a shame if we missed the doorway," I said. Pretty sure that was a hope. Right on cue, the ground rumbled. The waterfall seemed to stretch, waking up from its winter sleep, sloughing off icy sheets that splintered and crashed into the stream below. The cliff face split right down the middle, and the water sluiced to either side, revealing the mouth of a large cave. From the darkness, a giantess emerged. She was about 7 feet tall, petite for a giant. She wore a dress stitched entirely from white furs, which made me feel sad for the animals, polar bears most likely, that had given their lives for it. The woman's stark white hair was braided on either side of her face, and I kind of wished she had a veil, because, yikes. Her bulging eyes were the size of navel oranges. Her nose looked like it had been broken several times. When she grinned, her lips and teeth were stained black.
"Hello there."
She had the same gravelly voice I remembered from my dream. I involuntarily flinched, afraid she might swat my pickle jar.
"I am Thringa," she continued, "princess of the Earth Giants, sister of Thrym, son of Thrym, son of Thrym. I am here to welcome my new sister-in-law."
Alex turned toward me. I couldn't see her face, but the small creaking sound in her throat seemed to mean, "Abort, abort." Sam curtsied. She spoke in a higher-pitched tone than usual.
"Thank you, Thringa. My lady Samira is delighted to be here. I am her maid of honor."
"Prudence," I offered. Sam looked at me, her eye twitching above her bandit scarf.
"Yes, Prudence. And this is..."
Before she could take revenge by naming me Claribel or Horatio Q. Pantaloons, I said, Magnus Chase, son of Frey and carrier of the bride price. Nice to meet you. Thringa licked her black-stained lips. Seriously, I wondered if she sucked on ballpoint pens in her spare time.
Ah, yes, she said. You are on the guest list, son of Frey. And that is the Skofnung sword you bear? Very good. I will take that.
Not until gifts are exchanged during the ceremony, I said. We want to observe tradition, don't we? Thringa's eyes flashed dangerously and hungrily.
Of course. Tradition. And speaking of that...
From her polar bear fur sleeves, she produced a large stone paddle. I had a brief moment of terror, wondering if giants traditionally paddled their wedding guests.
You don't mind if I do a quick security sweep?
Thringa waved the wand over the goats. Then she inspected the chariot and finally us.
Good, she said. No Acer in the vicinity.
My therapist says Marvin has a god complex, Otis volunteered. But I don't think that counts.
Shut up or I'll destroy you, Marvin grumbled.
Thringa frowned as she studied our chariot.
This vehicle looks familiar. It even smells familiar.
Well, you know, I said, lords and ladies often ride chariots to their weddings. This is a rental.
Hmm.
Thringa pulled at the white whiskers on her chin.
I suppose.
She glanced again at the Skofnung sword on my back, a greedy gleam in her eyes. She motioned toward the cave entrance.
This way, little humans.
I didn't think it was fair of her to call us little. She was just a petite seven-footer herself, after all. She loped into the cavern and our goats followed, pulling the chariot straight through the middle of the broken waterfall. The tunnel was smooth bored and barely wide enough for our wheels. Ice coated the floor, which sloped downward at such a perilous angle I was afraid Otis and Marvin would slip and drag us to oblivion. Thringa, however, seemed to have no problem keeping her footing. We were about 50 feet into the tunnel when I heard the cave entrance closing behind us. Hey, Thringa, I said. Shouldn't we leave that waterfall open? How will we get out after the ceremony? The giantess gave me an inky grin.
Get out? Oh, I wouldn't worry about that. Besides, we have to keep the entrance closed and the tunnel moving around. We wouldn't want anyone interfering with the happy day, would we?
Sweat soaked the collar of my tuxedo. How long had that tunnel entrance remained open after we passed through? A minute? 2 minutes? Had Thor and his team been able to get inside? Had they been there at all? I heard nothing behind us, not even a discreet fart, so it was impossible to know. My eyes felt jumpy in their sockets. My fingers twitched. I wanted to talk to Alex and Sam to come up with some contingency plans in case things went wrong, but I couldn't do that with the white giantess Thringa right in front of us. As the giantess walked, she produced a chestnut from a pocket of her dress. She began absently tossing the nut into the air and catching it. This seemed like an odd lucky charm for a giant. Then again, I had a runestone that turned into a sword, so I shouldn't criticize. The air got colder and thicker. The stone ceiling seemed to press down on us. I felt like we were sliding sideways, but I wasn't sure if that was the wheels on the ice, or the tunnel shifting through the earth, or my spleen banging on the side of my body trying to get out. How far down does this tunnel go? My voice echoed off the rock walls. Thringa chuckled, turning her chestnut in her fingers.
Scared of deep places, son of Frey? Not to worry. We're only going a bit farther. Of course, the road itself goes all the way to Helheim. Most subterranean passages do, eventually.
She paused to show me the bottom of her shoes, which were studded with iron spikes.
Giants and goats are best suited for such a road. You small ones would lose your footing and slide all the way to the wall of corpses. We can't have that.
For once, I agreed with the giantess. The chariot rolled on. The smell of its flower garlands turned sweeter and cooler, reminding me of the funeral home where my mortal body had been displayed in a casket. I hoped I wouldn't have to have a second funeral. If I did, I wondered if I would be buried next to myself. Thringa's idea of a bit farther was 4 more hours of traveling. The goats didn't seem to mind, but I was going crazy with cold, anxiety, and boredom. I'd only had 1 cup of coffee and a few frowny pieces of donut at Steve's palace that morning. Now I felt hungry and strung out. I'd been reduced to an empty stomach, frayed nerves, and a full bladder. We saw no service stations or rest stops along the road. Not even a friendly bush. The girls must have also been suffering. They kept shifting from foot to foot and bouncing on their heels. Finally, we reached a split in the tunnel. The main road continued down into the icy dark. But to the right, a short path dead-ended at a set of iron-studded oak doors with knockers fashioned like dragon heads. The welcome mat read, "Bless this cave." Thringa grinned.
"We are here, little ones. I hope you're excited."
She pushed open the doors and our chariot rolled through, right into the barroom from Cheers. Chapter 49. Thrym. Suddenly, taking the road to Helheim didn't sound so bad. No wonder Thrym's lair had seemed so familiar to me when I saw it through the pickle jar glass in my dream. The place was a near-perfect replica of the Bull and Finch pub, the inspiration for the old TV show Cheers. Because it was across from the public garden, I'd been to the pub a few times when I was homeless, to get warm on a bitter winter's day or beg a hamburger from the patrons. The place was always full and rowdy, and somehow it made perfect sense to me that there would be an Earth Giant equivalent. As we rolled in, a dozen giants at the bar turned in our direction and raised their mead glasses.
"Samira!" they cried in unison.
More giants crowded the tables and booths, eating burgers and swilling down mead. Most of the patrons were a bit larger than Thringa. They were dressed in a riot of tuxedo pieces, fur, and armor that made my own outfit look positively understated. I scanned the room but saw no sign of Loki or my Uncle Randolph. I wasn't sure whether to be relieved or worried. At the far end of the bar, on a simple wooden throne under the big screen TV, sat the Earth Giant King himself, Thrym, son of Thrym, son of Thrym.
"At last," he bellowed in his walrus voice.
The king rose unsteadily. He bore such an uncanny resemblance to Norm from the TV show, I wondered if he got paid residuals. His body was perfectly round, stuffed into black polyester pants and a red t-shirt with a wide black tie. Fuzzy dark hair framed his moon face. He was the first giant I'd ever seen without facial hair, and I really wished he would grow some. His mouth was wet and pink. His chin was pretty much non-existent. His voracious eyes fixed on Alex as if she were a luscious plate of cheeseburgers.
"My queen has arrived,"
Thrym patted his ample belly.
"We can begin the festivities."
"Brother, you haven't even gotten changed yet," yelled Thringa. "And why is this place so filthy? I told you to clean up while I was gone."
Thrym frowned.
"What do you mean? We did clean up. We put on ties."
"Ties!" yelled the crowd of giants.
"You worthless scoundrels!"
Thringa picked up the nearest bar stool and cracked it over the head of a random giant, who collapsed in a heap.
"Turn off the television! Clean that counter! Sweep that floor! Wipe your faces!"
She wheeled on us.
"Sorry about these idiots. I'll get them ready in no time."
"Yeah, that's fine," I said, dancing the I need to pee dance. "Actually, restrooms?"
"Right down the hall there," Thringa pointed. "Leave the chariot. I'll make sure no one eats your goats."
I helped Sam and Alex out of the chariot, and we shuffled through the chaos, dodging mops and brooms and smelly giants, while Thringa moved through the crowd, shouting at her patrons to get ready for today's happy occasion quickly, or she would rip their heads off. The restrooms were located in the back, just where they would have been at Cheers. Fortunately, the area was empty, except for one giant who was passed out and snoring in a corner booth, his face resting on a platter of nachos.
"I'm confused," Alex said. "Why is this Cheers?"
"A lot of elements bleed through from Boston to the other worlds," Sam said. "Like Nidavellir looks like Southie," I said, "and Alfheim looks like Wellesley." Alex shuddered.
"Yeah, but I have to get married in Cheers?"
"Talk later," I said. "Pee now." "Yep," the girl said in unison. Being a guy and not burdened by a wedding dress, I finished first. A few minutes later, the girls reappeared, a tail of toilet paper trailing from the hem of Alex's gown. I doubted any of the giants would have noticed or cared, but Sam removed it for her.
"You think our friends made it inside?" I asked.
"I hope so," Alex said. "I'm so nervous, I..."
"Oof!"
That last syllable sounded like a bear choking on a Tootsie Roll. I checked the corner booth to make sure the giant hadn't heard it. He just muttered in his sleep and turned his head on his corn chip pillow. Sam patted Alex's shoulder.
"It's okay." She faced me. "Alex turned into a gorilla in the bathroom. She'll be fine."
"She what?"
"It happens," Sam said. "With shapeshifters, if you get nervous and lose focus." Alex belched. "I'm better. I think I'm back to human now. Wait."
She shimmied in her dress like she was trying to dislodge a pebble.
"Yeah, all good."
I didn't know if she was being serious or not. I wasn't sure I wanted to know. "Alex, if you accidentally change shape while you're out there among the giants..."
"I won't," she promised. "Just keep silent," Sam told her. "You're supposed to be the shy, blushing bride. I'll do the talking. Follow my lead. We'll stall as long as possible. Hopefully give..."
our friends enough time to get in position. But where is Loki? I asked. And my uncle? Sam got quiet. Not sure, but we have to keep our eyes peeled. Once we see the ham...
There you are!
Thringa emerged from the hallway.
We're ready for you now.
Of course, Sam said. We were just, talking about how much we love ham. I hope there's ham at the feast.
I winked at her like, smooth. Otis-level smooth.
Thringa ushered us back into the bar. Judging from the smell, someone had sprayed a copious amount of lemon pledge. Most of the broken glass and food droppings had been swept from the floor. The TV was off, and all the giants were standing against the far wall in a line, their hair combed, their ties straightened, their shirts tucked in. In unison, they chanted,
"Good afternoon, Miss Samira."
Alex curtsied. The real Samira said, "Good afternoon, class. My Lady Samira is too overwhelmed to speak, but she is very happy to be here." Alex brayed like a donkey. The giants glanced uncertainly at Thringa for etiquette tips. King Thrym frowned. He'd put on a black tux jacket with a pink carnation pinned to the lapel, which made him look slightly more elegantly ugly.
Why does my bride sound like a donkey?
She is crying with joy, Sam said quickly, because she has finally seen her handsome husband.
Hmm.
Thrym ran a finger down his many chins.
That makes sense. Come, sweet Samira. Sit by me and we will begin the feast.
Alex took the chair next to Thrym's throne. Thringa flanked her brother like a bodyguard, so Sam and I stood on the other side of Alex and tried to look official. Our job seemed to consist mostly of not eating, swatting aside the occasional mead mug that accidentally flew in Alex's direction, and listening to our stomachs growl. The first course was nachos. What was it with giants and nachos? Thringa kept grinning at me and eyeing the Skofnung sword, which was still strapped to my back. It was clear that she coveted the blade. I wondered if anyone told her it couldn't be drawn in the presence of women. I assume giantesses counted as women. I didn't know what would happen if somebody tried to unsheath Skofnung despite its restrictions, but I doubted it would be good. Try it, Jack's voice hummed in my mind like he was having a pleasant dream. Oh man, she's so fine. Go back to sleep, Jack, I told him. The giants laughed and shoveled down nachos, though they kept one eye on Thringa as if making sure she wasn't going to smash them with a barstool for bad behavior. Otis and Marvin stood in their harnesses right where we'd left them. Occasionally, a stray nacho flew in their direction, and one of the goats would snatch it out of the air. Thrym did his best to chat up Alex. She shied away and said nothing. Just to be polite, she snuck an occasional tortilla chip under her veil.
She eats so little, Thrym worried. Is she all right?
Oh, yes, Sam said. She's too excited to have much of an appetite, Your Majesty.
Hmm, Thrym shrugged. Well, at least I know she isn't Thor.
Of course not. Sam's voice went up an octave. Why would you think that?
Ages ago, when Thor's hammer was first stolen by my grandfather.
Our grandfather,
Thringa corrected, examining the ridges on her lucky chestnut.
Thor came disguised in a wedding dress to get it back.
Thrym's wet lips curled inward like he was trying to locate his back teeth.
I remember that day, though I was only a child. The false bride ate an entire ox and drank 2 cases of mead.
3 cases, Thringa said.
Thor could hide his body in a wedding dress,
Thrym said,
but he could not hide his appetite.
The giant smiled at Alex.
But don't worry, Samira, my love. I know you are not a god. I am smarter than my grandfather was.
Thringa rolled her huge eyes.
It's my security that keeps out the Aesir, brother. No god could pass through our doors without triggering the alarms.
Yes, yes,
Thrym said.
At any rate, Samira, you were all magically scanned the moment you came in. You are, as you should be, a child of Loki.
He knit his eyebrows.
Although, so is your maid of honor.
We're related, said the real Sam. That's to be expected, isn't it? A close relative often serves as maid of honor. Thrym nodded.
That's true. At any rate, when this wedding is concluded, the House of Thrym shall regain its former stature. My grandfather's failure will be put to rest. We will have a marriage alliance with the House of Loki.
He pounded his chest, causing his large belly to ripple and no doubt drowning entire nations of bacteria in his gut.
I will finally have my revenge.
Thringa turned her head, muttering,
I will have my revenge.
What's that, sister?
Thrym demanded.
Nothing. She bared her black teeth. Let's have the second course, shall we?
The second course was burgers. That really wasn't fair. They smelled so good, my stomach rolled back and forth, throwing a temper tantrum.
I tried to distract myself by thinking of the fight to come. Thrym seemed dumb enough. Maybe we could actually beat him. Unfortunately, he was backed up by several dozen Earth Giants, and his sister worried me. I could tell Thringa had her own agenda. Though she tried to conceal it, every once in a while she would glance at Alex with murderous hatred. I remembered something Heimdall had overheard her say. That they should just kill the bride as soon as she arrived. I wondered how long it would take the Aesir to get here once the hammer was revealed, and whether I could keep Alex alive for that long. I wondered where Loki was, and Uncle Randolph. Finally, the giants finished their meals. Thrym belched loudly and turned to his bride-to-be.
"At last, it is time for the ceremony," he said. "Shall we be on our way?"
My gut clenched. "On our way? What do you mean?" Thrym chuckled.
"Well, we're not doing the ceremony here. That would be rude. The entire wedding party is not present."
The king rose and faced the wall opposite the bar. Giants scrambled out of the way, moving their tables and chairs. Thrym thrust out his hand. The wall cracked open, and a new tunnel wormed its way through the earth. The sour, damp air from within reminded me of something I couldn't quite place. Something bad.
"No," Sam sounded as if her throat were closing up. "No, we can't go there."
"But we can't have a wedding without the father of the bride," Thrym announced cheerfully. "Come, my friends. My bride and I will say our vows in the cavern of Loki."
Chapter 50. A little refreshing poison in your face, sir? I really hate jigsaw puzzles. Did I ever mention that? I especially hate it when I stare at a piece for hours, wondering where it goes, then somebody else comes along, slaps it into place, and says, "There, stupid." That's what I felt like when I finally figured out Loki's plan. I remembered the map strewn across Uncle Randolph's desk when Alex and I had visited. Maybe in the back of my mind, I'd realize how strange that was at the time. Randolph's quest to find the Sword of Summer was over. Why would he still be poring over maps? But I hadn't asked Alex or myself about it. I'd been too distracted. Now I was willing to bet Randolph had been studying topographical maps of New England, comparing them with ancient Norse charts and legends. He'd been ordered to undertake a different search, to find the coordinates of Loki's cavern in relation to the Fortress of Thrym. If anyone could do it, my uncle could. That's why Loki had kept him alive. No wonder Loki and Randolph weren't at the bar. They were waiting for us at the other end of the tunnel. "We need our goats," I yelled. I waded through the crowd until I reached our chariot. I grabbed Otis's face and pressed my forehead against his. "Testing," I whispered. "Is this goat on? Thor, can you hear me?"
"You have beautiful eyes," Otis told me.
"Thor," I said, "red alert. We're on the move. They're taking us to Loki's cave. I don't know where that is. Tunnel is on the right-hand wall, angling down. Just find us. Otis, did he get the message?"
"What message?" Otis asked dreamily.
"Magnus Trace," the giant king yelled. "Are you ready?"
Yeah, I called back. "We just have to ride in the chariot because traditional wedding reasons." The other giants shrugged and nodded as if this made perfect sense to them. Only Thringa looked suspicious. I feared she was starting to doubt whether the chariot was a rental. Suddenly, the bar felt much too small, with all the giants putting on their coats, straightening their ties, swigging the last of their mead, and trying to figure out their places in the wedding procession. Samir and Alex made their way to the chariot.
"What do we do?" Alex hissed.
"I don't know," Sam said. "Where's our backup?" "We're going to be in the wrong place," I said. "How will they find us?" That was all we had time to say to one another before Thrym came over and took the reins of our goats. He pulled our chariot into the tunnel, his sister by his side, the rest of the giants filing in two by two behind us. As soon as the last giants were inside the tunnel, the entrance behind us sealed shut.
"Hey, Thrym!"
My voice bore an unfortunate resemblance to Mickey Mouse's, making me wonder what sort of strange gases were in this tunnel.
"You sure it's a good idea to trust Loki? I mean, wasn't it his idea to sneak Thor into your grandfather's wedding? Didn't he help Thor kill your family?"
The giant king stopped so abruptly, Marvin ran into him. I knew I was asking an impolite question, especially on the guy's wedding day, but I was grasping for anything that might slow down the parade. Thrym turned, his eyes like wet pink diamonds in the gloom.
"Don't you think I know that, human? Loki is a trickster. It is his nature. But Thor is the one who killed my grandfather, my father, my mother, my entire family."
"Except for me," Thringa muttered. In the darkness, she glowed faintly, a 7-foot-tall apparition of ugliness. I hadn't noticed that earlier. Maybe it was an ability that Earth giants could turn off and on. Thrym ignored her.
This marriage alliance is Loki's way of apologizing, don't you see? He realizes now that the gods were always his enemies. He regrets betraying my grandfather. We will combine our forces, take over Midgard, and then storm the city of the gods itself.
Behind us, the giants let loose a deafening cheer.
Kill the humans!
Shut it, Thringa yelled. We have humans with us.
The giants murmured. Someone in the back said,
Present company accepted.
But Great King Thrym, Sam said, do you really trust Loki?
Thrym laughed. For such a big guy, he had tiny teeth.
In his cave, Loki is a prisoner. Helpless. He is inviting me there. He gave me the location. Why would he make such a gesture of trust?
His sister snorted.
Gee, I don't know, brother. Maybe because he needs an Earth Giant to tunnel into his place of imprisonment? Because he wants to be free?
I was kind of wishing Thringa was on our side, except for the fact that she was a power-hungry giantess bent on revenge and murdering all humans.
We hold the power, Thrym insisted. Loki would not dare betray us. Besides, I am the one who will open his cave. He will be grateful. As long as he honors his part of the bargain, I will gladly let him go free. And the beautiful Samira,
Thrym leered at Alex.
She is worth the risk.
Under her veil, Alex squawked like a parrot. The noise was so loud, Thringa almost hit the ceiling.
What was that? The giantess demanded. Is the bride choking?
No, no, Sam patted Alex's back. That was just a nervous laugh. Samira gets uncomfortable when people compliment her.
Thrym chuckled.
Then she will be uncomfortable often when she is my wife.
Oh, your majesty, Sam said. Truer words have never been spoken.
Onward!
Thrym proceeded down the icy path. I wondered if our delay had bought our backup troops any time, assuming we even had backup troops. Could Thor still follow our progress through his goat's eyes and ears? Did he have some way to get a message to Blitz and Hearth and my Inheri hallmates from Floor 19? The tunnel closed behind us as we descended. I had a horrible vision of Thor in the giant's barroom, trying to break through the wall with his corkscrew and hand drill. After a few more minutes, the tunnel began to narrow. Thrym's progress slowed. I got the feeling that the Earth itself was fighting him now, trying to push him back. Maybe the Aesir had placed some sort of magic barrier around Loki's tomb. If so, it wasn't enough. We trudged onward and downward, though the chariot's axle now ground against the walls. Behind us, the giants walked single file. Next to me, Sam murmured softly, a chant in Arabic that I remembered from her prayers. A foul smell wafted up from the depths, like sour milk, rotten eggs, and burned meat. I was afraid it was not Thor.
I can sense him, Alex whispered, the first thing she'd said in almost an hour. Oh, no, no, no.
The tunnel widened suddenly, as if Thrym had finally burst through the Earth's defenses. Our procession filed into the chamber of Loki. I'd seen the place in my dream, but that didn't prepare me for the real thing. The cavern was about the size of a tennis court, with a high domed ceiling of cracked stone and broken stalactites, the remnants of which littered the floor. There were no other exits that I could see. The air was stale and sickly sweet with the stink of rot and burned flesh. Around the room, massive stalagmites rose from the floor. In other places, craters of viscous liquid bubbled and steamed, filling the cave with noxious gas. The temperature was about 100 degrees, and all the Earth giants tromping in didn't help with the heat or the smell. In the center of the room, just as I'd seen in my dream, Loki lay prone on the floor, his ankles bound together and tied to one stalagmite, his arms spread wide and chained to two others. Unlike the manifestations I'd seen of him before, the real Loki was neither handsome nor dashing. He wore nothing but a ragged loincloth. His body was emaciated, filthy, and covered with scars. His long, stringy hair might once have been reddish-brown, but it was now burned and bleached from centuries of being in this toxic cave. And his face, what was left of it, was a half-melted mask of scar tissue. Coiled around the stalactite at Loki's head, a massive serpent stared down at the prisoner, its fangs dripping yellow venom. At Loki's side knelt a woman in a white hooded robe. She was holding a metal bowl over Loki's face to catch the poison. The snake was a real producer, though. The venom dripped from its mouth like a partially turned-on showerhead. The woman's bowl was much too small. As we watched, venom filled it to the brim, and the woman turned to empty it, tossing the contents into one of the boiling pools behind her. She moved quickly, but poison still splattered Loki's face. He writhed and screamed. The cavern shook. I thought the ceiling would collapse on top of us, but somehow it held. Maybe the gods had fashioned this chamber to endure the shaking, just as they had fashioned Loki's bonds never to break,
the snake never to run dry, and the woman's cup never to be big enough. I wasn't religious, but the whole scene reminded me of a crucifix in a Catholic church, a man in excruciating pain, his arms outstretched. Of course, Loki was nobody's idea of a savior. He wasn't good. He wasn't sacrificing himself for something noble. He was an evil immortal paying for his crimes. Still, seeing him here in person, broken, filthy, and in agony, I couldn't help feeling pity. No one deserved this kind of punishment, not even a murderer and a liar. The woman in white lifted her cup again to shield his face. Loki shook the poison from his eyes. He took a ragged breath and glanced in our direction.
Welcome, Magnus Chase.
He gave me a hideous grin.
I hope you'll excuse me if I don't get up.
Gods, I muttered.
Oh no, no gods here, Loki said. They never visit. They sealed us in and left us. It's just me and my lovely wife, Sigyn. Say hello, Sigyn.
The woman in white looked up. Under her hood, her face was so emaciated she might have been a draugr. Her eyes were solid red, her expression blank. Blood-red tears streamed down her leathery face.
Oh, that's right.
Loki's voice was even more acidic than the air.
Sigyn hasn't spoken in 1,000 years, ever since the Aesir, in their infinite wisdom, butchered our sons and abandoned us here to suffer for eternity. But where are my manners? This is a happy occasion. How are you, Thrym, son of Thrym, son of Thrym, son of Thrym?
The king didn't look so well. He kept swallowing, like his nachos weren't staying down.
Hello, Loki. It's actually just 3 Thryms, and I am ready to seal our alliance with a marriage.
Yes, of course. Magnus, you've brought the Skofnung sword.
It was a statement, not a question. He spoke with such authority, I had to resist the urge to unsling the blade and show it to him. We have it, I said. First things first. We want to see the hammer. Loki laughed, a wet gurgling sound.
First, let's make sure the bride is actually the bride. Come here, my dear Samira. Let me see your face.
Both girls lurched toward him like they were being pulled with ropes. My pulse throbbed against the collar of my tux shirt. I should have considered that Loki would check under the girls' veils. He was, after all, the god of deception. Despite Alex's assurances that she could resist Loki's orders, she staggered forward just like Samira. I wondered how fast I could get out my sword, how many giants I could kill. I wondered if Otis and Marvin would be any good in a fight. Probably too much to hope for that they were trained in goat foo.
There we are, Loki said. Now let's have the bride lift her veil, eh? Just to make sure everyone is playing fairly.
Alex's hands jerked upward like they were on marionette strings. She began to lift her veil. The cave was silent except for the bubbling of hot springs and the constant drip of poison into Sigyn's cup. Alex pushed her veil back over her head, revealing Samira's face. For a second, I panicked. Had the girls somehow switched places? Then I realized, I don't know how, maybe something in her eyes, that Alex was still Alex. She'd shapeshifted to look like Sam, but whether or not that would fool Loki... I curled my fingers around my pendant. The silence was long enough for me to begin mentally composing my will.
Well, Loki said at last, I must admit I'm surprised. You actually followed orders. Good girl. I suppose that means your maid of honor is...
Sigyn's cup slipped, sloshing poison into Loki's face. The god screamed and writhed in his bonds. The girls quickly retreated. Sigyn righted her bowl. She tried to wipe the venom from Loki's eyes with her sleeve, but that only made him scream more. Her hem came away smoking and full of holes.
Stupid woman, Loki wailed.
For a moment, Sigyn seemed to meet my gaze, though it was hard to be sure with those solid red eyes. Her expression didn't change. The tears kept flowing, but I wondered if she had spilled that poison on purpose. I didn't know why she would. As far as I knew, she'd been kneeling at her husband's side faithfully for centuries. Still, it seemed an oddly timed mistake. Thringa cleared her throat, a beautiful sound like a chainsaw cutting through mud.
You asked about the maid of honor, Lord Loki. She says her name is Prudence.
Loki cackled, still trying to blink the poison from his eyes.
I'm sure she did. Her real name is Alex Fierro, and I told her not to come today, but no matter. Let us proceed. Thringa, have you brought the special guest I requested?
The giantess curled her ink-stained lips. She brought out the chestnut she'd been tossing around earlier. Your special guest is a nut? I asked. Loki laughed hoarsely.
You can say that. Go on, Thringa.
Thringa stuck her thumbnail into the shell and cracked the nut open.
She tossed it to the floor, and something small and dark rolled out. Not the meat of a chestnut, but a tiny human form. It grew in size until a stout old man stood before me, his rumpled black tuxedo dusted with plant chaff, his cheek marked with a ghastly burn scar in the shape of a hand. Whatever optimism I'd been holding on to shed faster than Steve's golden hair. "Uncle Randolph."
"Hello, Magnus," he said, his face contorted with misery. "Please, my boy, give me the Skofdung blade."
Chapter 51. Hello, Paranoia, my old friend. This is why I hate family reunions. You always have to face that one uncle you don't want to see. You know, the one who pops out of a nutshell and demands a sword. Part of me was tempted to smack Randolph upside the head with a Skofnung stone. Part of me wanted to shove him back into his chestnut, tuck him safely into my pocket, and get him away from Loki. None of me was tempted to give him the sword that could cut Loki free. "I can't do that, Randolph," I said. My uncle winced. His right hand was still bandaged from where I'd cut off two of his fingers. He pressed it against his chest and reached out with his left, his eyes desperate and heavy. A coppery taste spread over my tongue. I realized my rich uncle now looked more like a beggar than I ever had during my 2 years on the streets.
"Please," he said. "I was supposed to bring it today until you took it. I need it."
That was his job, I realized. Along with finding the location of this cave, he had been charged with freeing Loki, wielding the Skofnung sword as only one of noble blood could do. "Loki won't give you what you want," I told him. "Your family is gone." He blinked as if I had thrown sand in his eyes.
"Magnus, you don't understand."
"No sword," I said. "Not until we see Thor's hammer." The Giant King scoffed.
"The hammer is the Morgan Gifu, silly human. It will not be given until after the wedding night."
Next to me, Alex shuddered. The golden arcs of her necklace reminded me of the Rainbow Bridge, the way she had laid down so casual and relaxed on the Bifrost, making angels in the light. I couldn't allow her to be forced into marrying a giant. I just wished I knew how to stop it. "We need the hammer to bless the wedding," I said. "That is the bride's right. Let us see it and use it in the ceremony. Then you can take it back until tomorrow." Loki laughed.
"I don't think so, Magnus Chase. Nice try, though. Now, Skofnung, hold on."
Thringa fixed Loki with her "I'm about to hit you with a barstool" glare.
"The girl is within her rights. If she wants the blessing of the hammer, she should have it. Or does my brother wish to break our sacred tradition?"
Thrym flinched. His gaze flitted from his sister to his followers to Loki.
No. That is, yes. My bride Samira may receive the blessing. At the proper time in the ceremony, I will bring forth Mjolnir. Shall we begin?"
Thringa's eyes glittered wickedly. I didn't know what her game was, why she wanted to bring out the hammer early, but I wasn't going to argue. Thrym clapped his hands. I hadn't noticed before, but a few giants in the back of the procession had brought some pieces of furniture with them from the bar. Just to the left of Loki's binding place, they set down a plain wooden bench and covered the seat with furs. On either side of the bench, they placed a freestanding post like a totem pole, each one carved with fierce animal faces and runic inscriptions. Thrym sat. The bench groaned under his weight. One of his giants placed a crown of stone on his head, a circlet carved from a single piece of dark granite.
"Girl, you stand there," the giantess told Alex. "Between your father and your husband-to-be."
Alex hesitated. Loki made a tisk-tisk sound.
"Come now, daughter. Don't be shy. Stand next to me."
Alex did as she was told. I wanted to believe it was because she was playing the charade and not because she was being compelled, but I remembered the way she'd been yanked around as if by a rope earlier at Loki's command. Sam stood to my right, her hands clasped anxiously. Randolph shuffled off to wait by Loki's feet. He hunched there like a guilty mastiff that had come back from the hunt with no dead animal for his master.
"The cup,"
Thrym ordered. One of his men placed a jewel-encrusted goblet in his fingers. Red liquid sloshed over the brim. Thrym took a swig, then he offered the cup to Alex.
"Samira Alabas spent Loki. I give you drink, and with it the binding promise of my love. By my troth, you shall be my wife."
Alex took the cup in her lace-covered fingers. She looked around as if for guidance. It occurred to me that she might not be able to imitate Sam's voice as well as her face.
"You need not speak, girl," Thringa said. "Just drink."
Me? I would have been concerned about backwash, but Alex lifted the bottom of her veil and took a sip.
Excellent.
Thringa turned to me, her facial muscles twitching with impatience. Now, at last, the Moonder. Give me the sword, boy.
Sister, no, Thrym rumbled. It does not go to you.
Thringa wheeled on her brother.
What? I am your only kin. The bride price must pass through my hands.
I have an arrangement with Loki.
Thrym looked more confident now, almost smug with Alex so close at hand. I had a terrible feeling he was imagining the end of the ceremony, his chance to kiss the bride.
Boy, give the sword to your uncle. He will hold it.
Thringa glared at me. Looking in her eyes, I realized what she wanted. She intended to claim Skofnung for herself, and probably Mjolnir, too. She had no interest in a marriage alliance with Loki. She saw this wedding as a chance to wrest the throne from her brother. She would kill anyone who stood in her way. Maybe she didn't know that the Skofnung sword couldn't be unsheathed in the presence of a woman. Maybe she thought she could use it anyway. Or maybe she was happy wielding the power of a barstool as long as the other two weapons were safely locked up in her possession. Under different circumstances, I might have wished her luck assassinating her brother. Heck, I would have even given her a trophy good for half-price entrees in Asgard. Unfortunately, I got the feeling Thringa's plan also included killing me, Sam, Alex, and probably Uncle Randolph. I took a step back. I told you, Thrym. No hammer, no sword. Randolph shuffled toward me, his bandaged hand cradled against his cummerbund.
Magnus, you must, he said. This is the order of the ceremony. Moonder must be given first, and each wedding requires an ancestral sword to put the rings on. The blessing of the hammer comes afterward.
Jack's pendant hummed against my collarbone. Maybe he was trying to warn me. Or maybe he just wanted to get another look at Skofnung, babe among swords. Or maybe he was jealous because he wanted to be the ceremonial sword.
What is it, boy? Thrym grumbled. I have already promised that the traditional rites will be observed. Do you not trust us?
I almost laughed out loud. I looked at Sam. As discreetly as she could, she signed, "No choice, but watch him." Suddenly, I felt stupid. This whole time, we could have been using sign language to give each other secret messages. On the other hand, Loki might be controlling Sam, making her say that. Could he get inside her mind without even saying anything, without even snapping his fingers? I remembered what Sam had told me in Sieve's atrium. You have to stop him. If we're incapacitated, you may be the only one who can. For all I knew, I was the only one in the room not under Loki's control. Wow. Hello, paranoia. 2 dozen giants watched me. My uncle extended his good hand. I happened to meet Sigyn's blank red eyes. The goddess inclined her head ever so slightly. I don't know why that convinced me, but I unslung the sword and put Skofnung in Randolph's hand, the stone hanging heavily from the pommel. You are still a chase, I said quietly. You still have living family. Randolph's eye twitched. He took the sword mutely. He knelt before the king's bench. With some fumbling due to his bandaged hand, he held the sheath horizontally like a serving tray. Thrym placed 2 gold wedding rings in the center and held his hand over them like a blessing.
Ymir, ancestor of the gods and the giants, hear my words, he said. These rings signify our marriage.
He slipped 1 ring on his own finger and 1 on Alex's. Then he waved off Uncle Randolph. My uncle shuffled back with the sword, but Sam and I moved to intercept, blocking him from getting any closer to Loki. I was about to insist on the hammer, but Thringa beat me to it.
Brother, honor your promise.
Yes, yes, Thrym agreed. Samira, my dear, please sit.
Alex stepped forward, trance-like, and sat at the giant's side. It was hard to tell under the veil, but she seemed to be staring at the ring on her hand as if it were a brown recluse spider.
Giants, stand ready, Thrym said. You will surround the hammer and bring it here. You will hold it over my bride, very carefully, while we say the blessing. Then I will immediately send it back into the earth.
He turned to Alex.
Until tomorrow morning, my sweet, when it will be officially your Morgan Gifu. After that, I'll be sure to keep it safe for you.
He patted Alex's knee, which she seemed to enjoy almost as much as the poisonous wedding ring. Thrym extended his hand. He strained, his face turning the color of mulberry jam. The cavern rumbled. About 20 feet away, the floor cracked open, and gravel and mud pushed upward as if some huge insect were tunneling out. The hammer of Thor emerged and settled in a caldera of rubble. It looked just as I'd seen it in my dream. A huge trapezoidal head of metal with swirling runic designs and a thick, short handle bound in leather.
Its presence filled the room with a smell like thunderstorms. While the giants hurried to surround the hammer, I signed to Sam, "Watch Randolph." Then I scooted in the other direction, toward our chariot. I grabbed Otis's snout and pressed my face against his. "We're a go," I whispered. "Hammer is in the cave. I repeat, hammer is in the cave. Red October. Eagle has landed. Defense pattern Omega." I'm not sure where the military code stuff came from. I just figured it was the sort of thing Thor would respond to. And hey, I was nervous.
"You have beautiful eyes," Otis murmured.
"Bring the hammer here," Thrym told his giants. "Be quick about it."
"Yes," Loki agreed, shaking the poison-soaked hair out of his eyes. "And while you're doing that..."
"Randolph, cut me free!" That's when Alex snapped. Chapter 52. My Uncle Gets Some Backup Singers. Alex ripped off her veil, whipped her new golden garrote from her waist, and looped it around Thrym's neck. The Giant King rose, bellowing in outrage, as Alex scrambled onto his back and began choking him like she'd done with the Lindworm in Valhalla. "I want a divorce!" she yelled. Thrym's face turned an even deeper purple. His eyes bulged. His throat should have been cut clean through, but the skin around the garrote seemed to be turning to gleaming gray rock. Stupid Earth Giants and their stupid Earth magic. "Treachery!" Thringa's eyes danced with excitement, as if she finally saw a chance to do some treachery of her own. "Bring me the hammer!" She lunged for Mjolnir, but Samir's axe hurtled across the room and embedded itself in Thringa's side. The giantess fell forward like she was stealing second base. I summoned Jack. Uncle Randolph was almost at Loki's side. Before I could reach him, giants surrounded me. Jack and I leaped into action, working together efficiently for once, cleaving through one Earth giant after another. But we were badly outnumbered, and the giants, obvious fact alert, were really big. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Thringa clawing across the floor, trying to reach the now unguarded hammer. Thrym was still staggering around the room, slamming his back against the cave wall in an attempt to dislodge Alex. But each time he tried, Alex changed into a gorilla, which just made it easier for her to strangle Thrym. The giant's tongue was the size and color of an unripe plantain. He stretched his hand toward Thor's hammer, probably trying to send it back into the earth, but Alex tightened her garrote and broke his concentration. Meanwhile, Sam ripped off her own veil. Her Valkyrie spear appeared in her hand, flooding the room with white radiance. Two more giants charged toward her, blocking my line of vision. Somewhere behind me, Loki screamed, "Now, you fool!"
I can't, Randolph wailed.
"There are women present!" The god snarled.
I suppose he could have forced Alex and Sam to pass out, but that wouldn't solve the problem of Thringa and Sigyn.
"Unsheathe it anyway," he ordered. "Curse the consequences!"
"But
do it!"
I was too busy dodging clubs and stabbing giants to see what happened, but I heard the Skofnung's sword being drawn. It let loose an unearthly howl, an outraged chorus of 12 berserker spirits unleashed against their will and in violation of their ancient taboo. The sound was so loud it gave me double vision. Several giants stumbled. Unfortunately, Jack had also been affected. He turned heavy and inanimate in my hands, just as one of the giants backhanded me, sending me flying across the cavern. I slammed into a stalagmite. Something in my chest went crack. That probably wasn't good. I struggled to rise, trying to ignore the acid now sloshing around in my ribcage. My vision swam. Uncle Randolph was screaming, his voice blending with the howl of the Skofnung spirits. Mist swirled around him, pluming from the blade as if it had turned to dry ice.
"Hurry, you fool!" Loki yelled, "before the sword dissolves!"
Sobbing, Randolph struck the bonds at Loki's feet. With a sound like a high-tension wire snapping on a bridge, the ties broke.
"No!"
Sam shouted. She lunged forward, but the damage had been done. Loki brought his knees to his chest for the first time in 1,000 years. Sigyn retreated against the far wall, allowing the snake's venom to splash freely in her husband's face. Loki screamed and thrashed. Sam thrust her spear at my uncle, but Loki still had enough presence of mind to yell, "Samira, freeze!" Sam did. Her teeth clenched with effort. Her eyes burned with rage. She let loose a guttural howl, almost worse than the Skofnung swords, but she couldn't seem to break Loki's command. Randolph staggered, staring at his smoking sword. The edge was corroding, the black gunk from Loki's bindings chewing away at the magical blade.
"The stone, you idiot!"
Loki kicked at him futilely, turning his face away from the trickle of venom.
"Sharpen the blade and get on with it! You only have a few minutes!"
Smoke continued swirling around Randolph. His skin was starting to turn blue. I realized it wasn't just the sword that was dissolving.
The enraged spirits of Skofnung, still howling, were taking out their anger on my uncle. A giant charged me with a ceremonial totem pole. I managed to roll out of the way, my cracked ribs throbbing in protest, and crippled the giant by stabbing his ankles. Alex was still throttling the giant king. Both of them looked pretty bad. Thrym stumbled, his hands clawing sluggishly at his bride. Blood trickled from Alex's ear, spattering her white dress. I hoped Siv didn't expect us to return it dry-cleaned. Three of the giants had surrounded Thor's hammer again. Now they picked it up, staggering under its weight.
"What do we do with it?" one groaned. "Put it back in the earth?"
"Don't you dare!" Thringa yelled. She was on her feet now, clutching the axe still embedded in her side. "That hammer is mine!" Granted, I didn't know the rules of earth magic, but judging from the effort it had taken Thrym to retrieve the hammer, I doubted any of the giants would be able to sink it 8 miles into the earth again right away. Not in the middle of a battle with weapons flying and berserker spirits howling. I was more concerned about the sword. Randolph had already resharpened the blade. As Sam screamed at him to stop, he moved toward Loki's right hand. "Thringa!" I yelled. The white giantess glared at me, her inky lips curled into a snarl. "You want the sword for yourself?" I said, pointing to my uncle. "You'd better hurry." It seemed like a good idea, turning a murderous giantess on Loki. Unfortunately, Thringa also hated me. "That sword is finished," she said. "Already dissolving, but perhaps I'll take yours." She charged. I tried to raise Jack, but he was still dead weight in my hand. Thringa plowed into me and we both skidded across the floor, straight into one of the bubbling pits. Newsflash, pits of boiling liquid are hot. Had I been a regular mortal, I would have died in seconds. Being an Inherii, I figured I had a minute or so before the heat killed me. Hooray! My world was reduced to a boiling roar, a sulfurous yellow haze, and the white shape of the giantess whose fingers were digging into my windpipe. Jack was still in my grip, but that arm felt heavy and useless. With my free hand, I clawed blindly at Thringa, trying to break her grip on my throat. By chance, my fingers found the shaft of Sam's axe still buried in Thringa's side. I yanked it free and swung it in the general vicinity of the giantess's head. The pressure on my throat abruptly loosened. I pushed the giantess away and flailed for the surface. Somehow, I pulled myself, steaming and lobster red, out of the hot springs. More sounds of battle, blades clanging against blades, rocks shattering, giants roaring, the Skofnung sword's spirits continued their bitter howling. I tried to get up, but my skin felt like a cooked sausage casing. I was afraid that if I moved too fast, I might literally burst. "Jack," I croaked, "go." Jack left my grip, but he was moving slowly. Maybe he was still dazed by the howling of the spirits. Maybe my own condition was weakening him. It was all he could do to keep the giants from finishing me off. My vision was cloudy white with yellow blobs, as though my eyeballs had turned into hard-boiled eggs. I saw Thrym stagger to the wedding bench, grab it in both hands, and with one final burst of strength, swing it over his head at Alex. It crashed against her scalp, and she dropped off the giant's back. Nearby, I heard another high-tension snap. Loki's right hand was free. "Yes!" the god cried. He rolled to one side, out of the snake's range. "The last one, Randolph, and your family will be returned to you." Sam was still frozen. She struggled against Loki's will so intensely that a capillary had burst across her forehead, making a dotted red line there. In the light of her spear, Randolph's face looked bluer than ever. His skin was turning translucent, the structure of his skull showing through as he hurried to sharpen the Skofnung blade for one last strike. Three giants were still staggering around with Thor's hammer, not sure what to do with it. The giant king turned toward Alex, who now lay stunned on the floor. Another giant approached Sam warily, eyeing her glowing spear, obviously wondering if she was really as helpless as she looked. "Jack," I murmured, my voice like wet sand, but I didn't know what to tell him. I was barely able to move. A dozen giants were still in fighting shape. Loki was almost free. I couldn't save Alex and Sam and stop my uncle all at the same time. It was over. Then the cavern shook. A bulging rift split the ceiling like the opening claws of a grabber arm, spilling out a dwarf, an elf, and several Inherjar. Blitz struck first. Just as Thrym looked up, momentarily distracted from his desire to kill his bride, a dwarf in paisley chainmail landed on his face. Blitz wasn't heavy, but he had gravity and surprise on his side. The giant king crumpled beneath him like a pile of blocks. Hearthstone hit the cavern floor with his usual elfish grace and immediately tossed a rune at Loki. I guess the I stood for ice. Suddenly, the god of evil was encased in the stuff, his eyes wide with shock, his left arm still bound to the last stalagmite. making him the ugliest frozen treat I had ever seen. My comrades from Floor 19 launched themselves into battle with glee.
"Death and glory!"
Halfborn roared. "Kill everyone!" Mallory said.
"Charge!" TJ yelled.
TJ bayoneted the nearest giant. Mallory's knives flashed as she took out two more with well-placed crotch strikes. Tip, don't ever fight Mallory Keen without titanium crotch armor. Halfborn Gunderson, our own version of a giant, waded into the battle. Shirtless, as usual, with blood-red smiley faces painted all over his chest. I assume Mallory had gotten bored on the tunneling trip down here. Laughing insanely, Halfborn grabbed a giant's head and introduced it to his left knee. Halfborn's knee won. With Loki frozen, Samira was able to shake herself free of his control. She immediately put her spear to work, impaling an advancing giant, then threatening Uncle Randolph. "Back off!" she snarled. For a moment, I thought the tide had turned. Giants fell, one after another. I summoned Jack to my hand, and despite my overcooked condition, despite my exhaustion, I managed to get to my feet. The presence of my friends energized me. I staggered over to Alex and helped her up.
"I'm good,"
she muttered, though she looked disoriented and bloody. How she had survived being bashed with a bench was beyond me. I guess she was hard-headed.
He didn't control me. Loki didn't. I was pretending.
She gripped my hand, obviously concerned that I might not believe her. "I know, Alex," I squeezed her hand. "You did great." Meanwhile, Blitzen hit Thrym repeatedly in the face with his chainmail bow tie. As he did so, he looked up at me and grinned.
"Thor got in touch with us, kid. Nice work. It was actually easier for me to tunnel here once I knew the location. The gods are still digging their way in from this idiot's lair. The rock is magically hardened by this guy." He punched Thrym in the face again. "But they'll get through it."
The bodies of fallen giants lay strewn across the cavern. The last three standing were the ones guarding Thor's hammer, but they'd been staggering around so much with Mjolnir, back and forth from Thrym to Thringa like a moving crew with an oversized couch, that now they looked completely spent. Halfborn Gunderson made short work of them with his battle axe. Then he stood triumphantly over them, rubbing his hands eagerly.
"I've always wanted to try this."
He strained to lift Mjolnir, but the hammer stayed stubbornly in place. Mallory snorted.
"Like I keep telling you, you are not as strong as three giants. Now help me over here."
"Look out!" Alex cried. Halfborn's effort with the hammer had distracted us from Uncle Randolph and Loki. I turned just as the block of ice shattered, spraying us with frozen shards. In the moment we were blinded, my uncle lunged forward with Skofnung. He struck the last restraint around Loki's left wrist, snapping the bonds. The sword dissipated in a puff of smoke. The chorus of angry berserkers went silent. My uncle dropped to his knees, screaming, his arm beginning to dissolve into blue vapor. In the back of the cave, Sigyn cringed as her husband rose to his feet.
"Free," Loki said, his emaciated body steaming, his face a wasteland of scarred flesh. "Now the fun begins."
Chapter 53.
It's hammer time.
Someone had to say it. Timing. The Aesir really needed to work on their timing. We still had no godly backup. We had a hammer, but no one to wield it. And Loki stood unchained before us in all his mutilated glory, ice clinging to his hair, poison dripping from his face.
"Ah, yes," he smiled. "For my first act."
He lashed out with more speed and strength than should have been possible for a guy who'd been chained up for 1,000 years. He grabbed the snake that had been dripping venom on him, yanked it off its stalactite, and snapped it like a whip. Its spine cracked with a sound like bubble wrap popping. Loki dropped it, as lifeless as a garden hose, and turned toward us.
"I really hated that snake," he said. "Who's next?"
Jack lay heavy in my hand. Alex could barely stand. Sam had her spear ready, but she seemed reluctant to charge, probably because she didn't want to be frozen by your father again. Or worse. My other friends closed ranks around me. Three strong in Harriar, Blitzen in his fashionable chainmail, Hearthstone with his Rowan Wood runes clacking in their bag as his fingers shifted through them.
"We can take him," TJ said, his bayonet wet with giant blood. "All at once. Ready?"
Loki spread his arms in a welcoming gesture. Randolph knelt at his feet, silent in agony as the blue vapor spread up his arm, eating away at his flesh. Against the far wall, Sigyn stood very still, her pure red eyes impossible to read, her empty poison bowl clasped to her chest.
"Come on then, warriors of Odin," Loki taunted. "I'm unarmed and weak. You can do it."
That's when I knew in my heart that we couldn't.
We would charge in and die. We'd end up lying on the floor with our spine snapped, just like that snake. But we had no choice. We had to try. Then, from the wall behind us came a cracking sound, followed by a familiar voice.
We're through! Yes, Heimdall, I'm sure this time. Probably.
The end of an iron staff poked through the rock and wriggled around. The wall began to crumble. Loki lowered his arms and sighed. He looked more annoyed than terrified.
Ah, well. He winked at me, or maybe his face was just convulsing from centuries of poison damage. Next time?
The ground crumbled underneath him. The entire back half of the cavern fell away. Stalagmites and stalactites imploded. Pools of boiling liquid turned into steaming waterfalls before disappearing into the void. Loki and Sigyn fell into nothingness. My uncle, who had been kneeling at the edge of the break, also slipped into the chasm.
Randolph! I scrambled to the edge.
About 50 feet below, Randolph crouched on a wet and steaming slope of rock, trying to keep his balance. His right arm was gone, the blue vapor now crawling up his shoulder. He looked up at me, his skull grinning through his translucent face.
Randolph, hold on, I said.
No, Magnus.
He spoke softly as if he didn't want to wake anyone.
My family.
I am your family, you old idiot!
Maybe that wasn't the most endearing thing to say. Maybe I should have thought good riddance and let him fall. But Annabeth was right. Randolph was family. The whole Chase clan attracted the gods' attention, and Randolph had borne that curse more heavily than most of us. Despite everything, I still wanted to help him. He shook his head, sadness and pain fighting for dominance in his eyes.
I'm sorry. I want to see them.
He slipped sideways into the darkness without a sound. I had no time to grieve, no time even to process what had happened, before three gods in tactical armor burst into the cave. They all wore helmets, infrared goggles, jackboots, and full Kevlar body armor with the letters GRRM across the chest. I might have mistaken them for a regular SWAT team, except for the excessive facial hair and the non-standard issue weapons. Thor stormed in first, holding his iron staff like a rifle, pointing it in every direction.
Check your corners, he yelled.
The next guy through was Heimdall, grinning like he was having an excellent time. He also held his massive sword like a gun, his phablet of doomsday stuck to the end. He swept the room, taking pictures of himself from every angle. The third guy I didn't recognize. He stepped into the cavern with a clang, because his right foot was encased in the most grotesque, oversized shoe I had ever seen. It was cobbled together from scraps of leather and metal, pieces of neon athletic shoes, Velcro straps, and old brass buckles. It even had half a dozen stiletto heels sticking up from the toe like porcupine quills. The three gods scampered around looking for threats. With incredibly bad timing, the giant king Thrym began to regain consciousness. The god with the weird shoe rushed over and raised his right foot. His boot grew to the size of a Lincoln town car, a junkyard wedge of old shoe parts and scrap metal all compacted together into a huge death stomper. Thrym didn't even have time to scream before Shoe Man stepped on him. Splat! No more threat.
Good one, Vidar, Heimdall called. Could you do that again so I can snap a picture?
Vidar frowned and pointed at the mess. In perfect ASL, he signed, "He is flat now." Across the room, Thor gasped,
"My baby!"
He ran past his goats and snatched up the hammer Mjolnir.
"At last!
Are you okay, Mimi? Did those nasty giants reprogram your channels?"
Marvin jingled the bells on his collar.
"We're fine, boss," he muttered. "Thanks for asking."
I looked at Sam. Did he just call his hammer Mimi? Alex growled. "Hey, Acer idiots!" She pointed to the newly formed abyss. "Loki went that way."
"Loki?" Thor turned. "Where?"
Lightning flickered through his beard, which probably rendered his infrared goggles useless. With even worse timing than Thrym, the giantess Thringa chose that moment to show she was still alive. She launched herself from the nearest cesspool like a breaching whale and landed at Heimdall's feet, gasping and steaming.
"Kill you all,"
she croaked, which wasn't the smartest thing to say when facing three gods in tactical armor. Thor pointed his hammer at Thringa as casually as if he were channel surfing. Tendrils of lightning shot from the runes engraved in the metal. The giantess burst into a million bits of rubble.
"Dude!" Heimdall complained. "What did I tell you about lightning so close to my phablet? You want to fry the motherboard?"
Thor grunted.
"Well, mortals, it's a good thing we arrived when we did, or that giantess might have hurt someone. Now, what were you saying about Loki?"
The thing about gods is, you can't really slap them when they're acting stupid. They'll just slap you back and kill you. Besides, I was too exhausted, shocked, boiled, and grief-stricken to complain much, even though the Aesir had let Loki get away. No, I corrected myself. We let Loki get away. While Thor murmured sweet nothings to his hammer, Heimdall stood at the edge of the chasm and peered into the darkness.
Goes all the way to Helheim. No sign of Loki.
My uncle? I asked. Heimdall's white irises turned toward me. For once, he wasn't smiling.
You know, Magnus, sometimes it's best not to look as far as you're able to look, or to listen to everything you're able to hear.
He patted me on the shoulder and walked away, leaving me to wonder what the heck he meant. Vidar, the god with the shoe, went around checking for wounded, but everybody seemed more or less okay. Everybody aside from the giants, that is. All of them were now dead. Halfborn had pulled his groin trying to pick up Thor's hammer. Mallory had given herself a stomachache laughing at him, but both those problems were easily fixed. TJ had come through without a scratch, though he was worried how to get Earth Giant blood off the stock of his rifle. Harstone was fine, though he kept signing Othala, the name of his missing runestone. He signed to Blitz that he could have stopped Loki if he'd had it. I suspected he was just being too hard on himself, but I wasn't sure. As for Blitz, he leaned against the cave wall and sipped from a canteen, looking tired after stone sculpting all the way into Loki's cavern. As soon as the gods had arrived, Jack had turned back into a pendant, muttering something about not wanting to see Heimdall's diva sword. In truth, I think he mostly felt guilty that he hadn't been more help to us, and sorry that Skofnung had turned out not to be the blade of his dreams. Now Jack hung around my neck again, snoozing fitfully. Fortunately, he hadn't suffered any damage, and he'd been so stunned throughout most of the fight that I'd hardly absorbed any fatigue from him at all. He would live to fight and sing top 40 songs another day. Sam, Alex, and I sat at the edge of the chasm, listening to the echoes in the darkness. Vidar wrapped my ribs, then dabbed some salve on my arms and face and told me in sign language that I wouldn't die. He also bandaged Alex's ear and signed, "Minor concussion, stay awake." Sam herself had no major physical injuries, but I can sense the emotional pain radiating from her. She sat with her spear across her lap like a kayak paddle, looking as though she were ready to navigate straight to Helheim. I think Alex and I both knew instinctively that we shouldn't leave her alone.
"I was helpless again," she said miserably. He controlled me."
Alex patted her leg.
"Not entirely true. You're alive."
I looked back and forth between them.
"What do you mean?"
Alex's darker eye was more dilated than the lighter one, probably because of the concussion. It made her stare look even more hollow and shell-shocked.
"When things went bad during the fight," she said, "Loki just willed us to die. He told my heart to stop beating, my lungs to stop breathing. I assume he did the same to Sam."
Samira nodded, her knuckles whitening on the shaft of her spear.
"Gods."
I didn't know what to do with all the anger inside me. My chest boiled at the same temperature as the cesspool. If I hadn't hated Loki enough already, now I was determined to follow him to the ends of the Nine Worlds and do something really bad to him. Like tie him down with his children's guts, asked a little voice in my head. Put a venomous snake over his face. How did that sort of justice work out for the Aesir?
"So you did resist him," I told the girls. "That's good."
Alex shrugged.
"I told you, he can't control me. Earlier I was just acting so he wouldn't get suspicious. But Sam, yeah. That was a good first start. You stayed alive. You can't expect complete resistance right away. We can work on it together."
"He's free, Alex," Sam snapped. "We failed. I failed. If I'd been faster, if I'd realized..."
"Failed?"
The Thunder God loomed over us.
"Nonsense, girl. You retrieved my hammer. You are heroes and will all receive trophies."
I could see Sam gritting her teeth, trying not to yell at Thor. I was afraid she'd bust another capillary from the strain.
"I appreciate that, Lord Thor," she said at last. "But Loki never cared about the hammer. It was all a smokescreen to get himself freed."
Thor frowned and raised Mjolnir.
"Oh, don't you worry, lass. We'll put Loki back in chains. And I promise you, he will care about this hammer when I ram it down his throat."
Brave words, but when I looked around at my friends, I could tell that no one was reassured. I stared at the letters on Thor's Kevlar vest. What is GRRM anyway?
"It's pronounced GRRM," Thor said. "An acronym for God Rapid Response Mobilization."
"Rapid?" Alex snarled. Are you kidding me? You guys took forever to get here.
Now, Heimdall stepped in. You were a moving target, weren't you? We got into the tunnel at Bridal Veil Falls just fine. But then the whole moving to Loki's lair thing, that caught us off guard. We were sealed in at both ends with Earth Giant hardened stone. Digging after you, well, even with three gods, that was tough.
Especially when one takes pictures and does not help, Vidar signed. The other two gods ignored him, but Hearthstone signed back. They never listen, do they? I know, signed the god. Hearing people. Silly. I decided I liked Vidar. Excuse me, I asked him, signing as I spoke. Are you the god of shoes, or healing, or... Vidar smirked. He crooked both of his index fingers. He placed one under his eye, then tapped that finger with the other hooked one. I hadn't seen that sign before, but I got it. Eye for an eye, talons and hooks. You're the god of vengeance. That seemed odd to me, since he seemed so kind and was mute. Then again, you weren't an expanding shoe that could stomp giant kings flat.
Oh, Vidar is our go-to guy for emergencies, Heimdall said. That shoe of his is made from every shoe scrap that has ever been thrown away. It can... Well, you saw what it can do. Hey, do you think we can get a group shot with everyone?
No, said everyone. Thor glared at the Bridge Guardian. Vidar is also called the Silent One, which means he doesn't talk. He also doesn't take selfies constantly, which makes him good company. Mallory Keane sheathed her twin knives.
Well, that's fascinating, I'm sure. But shouldn't you, Aesir, be doing something productive now, like... Oh, finding Loki and tying him up again?
The girl is right, Vidar signed. Time is wasting.
Listen to brave Vidar, girl, said Thor. Loki's capture can wait for another day. Right now, we should be celebrating the return of my hammer.
That's not what I said, Vidar signed.
Besides, Thor added, I don't need to search for the scoundrel. I know exactly where he's going.
You do? I asked. Where? Thor pounded me on the back, fortunately with his hand and not his hammer.
We'll talk all about it back at Valhalla. Dinner is on me!
Chapter 54. Squirrels in the window may be larger than they appear. I love it when gods offer to pay for dinner that's already free. Almost as much as I love assault squads that show up after the assault. I never got the chance to complain about it, though. Once we got back to Valhalla, thanks to Thor's very overcrowded chariot, we were given a celebration feast that was wild even by Viking standards. Thor paraded around the feast hall, holding Mjolnir above his head, grinning and yelling,
Death to our enemies!
And generally causing a commotion. Party horns were blown, mead was guzzled, pinatas were cracked open with a mighty Mjolnir, and candy was eaten. Only our little group sulked, clustered around our table and half-heartedly accepting the pats on the back and compliments from our fellow in Herjar. They assured us we were heroes. Not only had we retrieved Thor's hammer, we had destroyed an entire wedding party of evil, badly dressed earth giants. Nobody complained about Blitz and Hearth's presence. Nobody paid much attention to our new friend Vidar, despite his strange footwear. The Silent One lived up to his name and sat with us silently, occasionally asking Hearthstone questions in a form of sign language I didn't recognize. Heimdall left early to get back to the Bifrost Bridge. There were important selfies to be taken. Meanwhile, Thor partied like a madman, body surfing over crowds of Inheriar and Valkyries. Whatever he had wanted to tell us about Loki's location, he seemed to have forgotten, and I wasn't going to get anywhere near him in that mob. My only consolation? Some of the lords at the Thane's table also looked uneasy. Every once in a while, Helgi the manager would scowl at the crowd as if he wanted to scream what I was thinking. Stop celebrating, you idiots! Loki is free! Maybe the Inheriar were choosing not to worry about it. Maybe Thor had assured them, too, that it was a problem easily fixed. Or maybe they were celebrating because Ragnarok was near. That idea scared me the most. As dinner ended, Thor rode off in his chariot without even acknowledging us. He bellowed to the assembled host that he had to hurry to the borders of Midgard and demonstrate his hammer's power by blasting some giant armies to sizzly bits. The Inheriar cheered and then began streaming out of the feast hall, no doubt heading to smaller but even wilder parties. Vidar said his goodbyes after a short conversation with Hearthstone in that strange language. Whatever he said, the elf chose not to share it with us. My hallmates offered to stay with me, but they had been invited to an after-party, and I told them to go. They deserved some fun after the tedium of digging their way into Loki's cavern. Sam, Alex, Blitz, and Hearth accompanied me to the elevators. Before we got there, Helgi appeared and grabbed my arm. You and your friends need to come with me. The manager's voice was grim. I got the feeling we would not be receiving trophies and coupons for our brave deeds. Helgi led us through passageways I'd never seen before, up staircases into the far reaches of the hotel. I knew Valhalla was big, but each time I went exploring, I was newly amazed. The place went on forever, like Costco or a chemistry lecture. At last, we arrived at a heavy oaken door with a brass plaque that read, Manager. Helgi pushed open the door and we followed him inside to an office. Three of the walls and the ceiling were paneled in spears, polished oak shafts tipped with gleaming silver points. Behind Helgi's desk, the back wall was one huge plate glass window overlooking the endless swaying branches of the World Tree. I'd seen a lot of different views from the windows of Valhalla. The hotel had access to each of the nine worlds, but I'd never seen a view straight into the tree. It made me feel disoriented, like we were floating in its branches, which, cosmically speaking, we were. Sit. Helgi waved to a semicircle of chairs on the visitor's side of the desk. Sam, Alex, Blitz, Hearth, and I got comfortable, with lots of squeaking leather and creaking wood. Helgi plopped himself down behind his huge mahogany desk, which was empty except for one of those desk toy thingies with the hanging silver ball bearings that you can knock back and forth. Oh, and the ravens. At either front corner of the desk perched one of Odin's twin ravens, both of them glaring at me as if trying to decide whether to assign me detention or fee me to the trolls. Helgi leaned back and steepled his fingers. He would have looked intimidating if it weren't for his roadkill explosion of hair and the leftover bits of feast beast in his beard. Sam fiddled nervously with her ring of keys.
Sir, what happened in Loki's cave? It wasn't my friend's fault. I take full responsibility.
The hell, Haim, you do, Alex snapped. Sam did nothing wrong. If you're going to punish anyone...
Stop, Helgi ordered. No one is getting punished.
Blitzen exhaled with relief.
Well, that's good, because we didn't have time to return this to Thor. But honestly, we meant to.
Hearthstone produced Thor's 2x4 hall pass key and set it on the manager's desk. Helgi frowned. He slipped the pass into his desk drawer, which made me wonder how many others he had in there. You are here, said the manager, because Odin's ravens asked for you.
Hugin and Munin?
Thought and memory, I recalled from the Hotel Valhalla guide. The birds made that weird croaking noise ravens love to make, as if regurgitating the souls of all the frogs they'd eaten over the centuries. They were much larger than normal ravens, and creepier. Their eyes were like gateways into the void. Their feathers were 1,000 different shades of ebony. When light hit them, runes seemed to glisten in their plumage, dark words rising out of a sea of black ink. Helgi tapped his desk toy. The balls started swinging and hitting each other with an annoying click, click, click.
Odin would be here, said the manager, but he is tending to other matters. Hugin and Munin represent him.
As a bonus, Helgi leaned forward and lowered his voice.
The ravens don't show motivational PowerPoints.
The birds squawked in agreement.
Now, down to business, Helgi said. Loki has escaped, but we know where he is. Samira Alabas, your next mission as Odin's Valkyrie in charge of special operations will be to find your father and put him back in chains.
Samira lowered her head. She didn't look surprised. More like she'd lost the final appeal for a death sentence she'd been fighting her entire life.
Sir, she said, I will do as I'm ordered. But after what happened the last two times I faced my father, the ease with which he controlled me...
You can learn to fight it, Alex interrupted.
I can help.
I'm not you, Alex. I can't...
Sam gestured vaguely at her sister, as if to indicate all the things Alex was that Sam could never be.
Helgi brushed some food scraps out of his beard.
Samira, I didn't say it would be easy, but the ravens say you can do it. You must do it, and so you shall.
Sam stared at the ball bearings bouncing back and forth. Click, click, click.
This place where my father went, she said. Where is it?
The Eastern Shores, Helgi said. Just as the old stories say, now that Loki is free, he has gone to the docks where he hopes to complete construction of Naglfar.
Hearthstone signed, The Ship of Nails, that is not good. I felt cold and seasick. I remembered visiting that ship in a dream, standing on the deck of a Viking longboat the size of an aircraft carrier and made entirely from the toenails and fingernails of the dead. Loki had warned me that when Ragnarok began, he would sail the ship to Asgard, destroy the gods, steal their Pop-Tarts, and otherwise cause mass chaos.
If Loki is free, is it already too late? I asked. Isn't his unbinding one of the things that signals the beginning of Ragnarok?
Yes and no, Helgi said. I waited.
Am I supposed to pick one? The unbinding of Loki does help start Ragnarok, Helgi said, but nothing says this escape is his last and final escape. It's conceivable you could recapture him and put him back, thus postponing Doomsday.
Like we did with Fenris Wolf, Blitz muttered. That was a piece of cake.
Exactly, Helgi nodded enthusiastically. Cake!
I was being sarcastic, Blitz said. I suppose they don't have sarcasm in Valhalla any more than they have decent barbers.
Helgi reddened.
See here, dwarf.
He was interrupted by a huge brown and orange shape slamming into his window. Blitzen fell out of his chair. Alex leaped straight up and clung to the ceiling in the form of a sugar glider. Sam rose with her axe in hand, ready for battle. I valiantly took cover down in front of Helgi's desk. Hearthstone just sat there, frowning at the giant squirrel.
Why? He signed.
It's all right, everyone, Helgi assured us. It's just Ratatosk. The words just Ratatosk did not compute. I'd been chased through the world tree by that monstrous rodent. I'd heard his soul-searing, scolding voice. It was never all right when he showed up.
No, really, Helgi insisted. The window was soundproof and squirrel-proof. The beast just likes to stop by and taunt me sometimes.
I peeked over the top of the desk. Ratatosk was barking and screeching, but only the faintest murmur came through the glass. He gnashed his teeth at us and pressed his cheek against the window. The ravens didn't seem bothered. They glanced over as if to say, "Oh, it's you." Then went back to preening their feathers.
"How do you stand it?" Blitzen asked. That thing is deadly."
The squirrel puffed his mouth against the glass, showing us his teeth and gums, then licked the window. "I'd rather know where he is than not," Helgi said. "Sometimes I can tell what's going on in the Nine Worlds just by observing the squirrel's level of agitation." Judging from Ratatosk's current state, I guess some serious stuff was going down in the Nine Worlds. To alleviate our anxiety, Helgi rose, lowered the blinds, and sat back down.
"Where were we?" he said.
"Ah, yes, cake and sarcasm." Alex dropped from the ceiling and returned to her regular form. She changed out of her wedding dress earlier and was back in her old diamond-patterned sweater vest. She tugged at it casually as if to say, "Yes, I totally meant to turn into a sugar glider." Sam lowered her axe.
"Helgi, about this mission, I wouldn't know where to start. Where the ship is docked, these shores could be on any world."
The manager turned up his palms. "I don't have those answers, Samira, but Hugin and Munin will brief you privately. Go with them to the high places of Valhalla. Let them show you thoughts and memories." To me, that sounded like some trippy vision quest with Darth Vader appearing in a foggy cave. Sam didn't look too happy about it either.
"But Helgi..."
"There can be no debate," the manager insisted. "Odin chose you. He has chosen this entire group because..." He paused abruptly and put a finger to his ear. I'd never realized Helgi wore an earpiece, but he was obviously listening to something. He glanced up at us. "Apologies. Where was I? Ah, yes, all five of you were present when Loki escaped. Therefore, all five of you will have a part to play in recapturing the outlaw god."
"We broke it, we bought it," I muttered.
"Exactly," Helgi grinned. "Now that that's settled, you'll have to excuse me. There's been a massacre in the yoga studio, and they need clean mats."
Chapter 55. Daisies in the Shape of an Elf. As soon as we left the office, the ravens led Sam up another staircase. She glanced back at us uneasily, but Helgi had been pretty clear that the rest of us weren't invited. Alex turned on her heel and marched off in the opposite direction.
"Hey," I called. "Where?"
She looked back, her eyes so angry I couldn't finish my question.
"Later, Magnus," she said. "I have to..."
She made a strangling gesture with her hands.
"Just later."
That left me with Blitzen and Hearthstone, who were both swaying on their feet.
"You guys want to...
sleep?"
Blitzen said.
"Please, immediately."
I led them back to my room, the three of us camped in the grass in the middle of my atrium. It reminded me of the old days, sleeping in the public garden, but I'm not going to tell you I was nostalgic for being homeless. Homelessness is not something any sane person would ever be nostalgic about. Still, like I've said, it was a lot simpler than being an undead warrior who chased fugitive gods across the Nine Worlds and conducted serious conversations while a monstrous squirrel made faces at you in the window. Hearthstone conked out first. He curled up, sighed gently, and went right to sleep. When he was still, despite his black clothes, he seemed to blend into the shadows of the grass. Maybe it was elf camouflage, a remnant of the time when they were one with nature. Blitz wedged his back against a tree and stared at Hearth with concern.
"We're going to Blitzen's best tomorrow," he told me.
reopen the shop. Spend a few weeks trying to regroup and get back to whatever normal is. Before we have to go and find... The prospect of taking on Loki again was so daunting he couldn't even finish the thought. I felt guilty that I hadn't considered Hearthstone's grief the past few days. I'd been too preoccupied with Thor's stupid TV hammer. That's a good idea, I said. Alfheim was rough for him. Blitz clasped his hands near where the Skofnung sword had pierced him. Yeah, I'm worried about Hearth's unfinished business there. I wish I'd been more help to him, I said. To both of you. Nah, kid. Some kinds of help you have to do for yourself. Hearth, he's got a dad-shaped hole in his heart. You can't do anything about that. His dad will never be a nice guy. No kidding. But Hearth has to come to terms with that. Sooner or later, he'll have to go back and face him. Get his inheritance room back one way or another. When and how that will happen, though, he shrugged helplessly. I thought about my Uncle Randolph. How did you decide when someone was irretrievably lost? When they were so evil or toxic or just plain set in their ways that you had to face the fact that they were never going to change? How long could you keep trying to save them? And when did you give up and grieve for them as though they were dead? It was easy for me to advise Hearthstone on his father. The dude was way past horrible. But my own uncle, who had gotten me killed, stabbed my friend, and freed the god of evil, I still couldn't quite bring myself to write him off. Blitzen patted my hand. Whatever happens, kid, we'll be ready when you need us. We'll see this through and get Loki back in chains, even if I have to make those chains myself. Yours would be a lot more fashionable, I said. Blitz's mouth twitched. Yeah. Yeah, they would. And don't feel guilty, kid. You did good. I wasn't so sure about that. What had I accomplished? I felt like I'd spent the last 6 days scrambling around doing damage control, trying to keep my friends alive, trying to minimize the fallout from Loki's plot. I imagined what Samira would say. That's enough, Magnus. She'd probably point out that I'd helped Amir. I managed to heal Blitzen. I'd gotten Thor's assault team into the giant's lair to retrieve the hammer. I'd bowled a really mean game of doubles with my partner, the African bush elephant. Still, Loki was free. He'd hurt Sam. He'd crushed her confidence badly. And then there was that little thing about all the 9 worlds now at risk of being thrown into chaos. I feel terrible, Blitz, I admitted. The more I train, the more powers I learn, it just seems like the problems get 10 times bigger than what I can handle. Is that ever going to stop? Blitz didn't answer. His chin rested on his chest. He was quietly snoring. I put a blanket over him. I sat for a long time watching the stars through the tree branches and thinking about holes in people's hearts. I wondered what Loki was doing right now. If I were him, I would be planning the most massive revenge spree the 9 worlds had ever seen. Maybe that's why Vidar, the god of vengeance, had seemed so gentle and quiet. He knew it didn't take much to start a chain reaction of violence and death. One insult, one theft, one severed chain. Thrym and Thringa had nursed a grudge for generations. They'd been used by Loki not just once, but twice, and now they were dead. I don't remember falling asleep. When I woke the next morning, Blitz and Hearth were gone. A bed of daisies bloomed where Hearthstone had slept. Maybe it was his way of saying goodbye, thank you, see you soon. I still felt depressed. I showered and got dressed. Just brushing my teeth felt ridiculously normal after the last few days. I was about to head to breakfast when I noticed a note slipped under my door in Samira's elegant cursive. Some ideas. Thinking cup? I'll be there all morning. I stepped into the hallway. I liked the idea of getting out of Valhalla for a little while. I wanted to talk to Sam. I wanted good mortal coffee. I wanted to sit in the sunshine and eat a poppy seed muffin and pretend that I wasn't an Inherii with a fugitive god to catch. Then I looked across the hall. First, I needed to do one more difficult and dangerous thing. I needed to check on Alex Fierro. Alex opened the door and greeted me with a cheerful, "Get lost." Wet clay spackled Alex's face and hands. I glanced inside and saw the project sitting on the potter's wheel. Dude! I stepped inside. For some reason, Alex let me. All the shattered pottery had been cleaned up. The racks were filled with new pots and cups, just drying and still unglazed. On the wheel stood a huge vase, about 3 feet tall, shaped like a trophy. I grinned. For Sieve? Alex shrugged. Yeah, if it turns out okay. Is this gift ironic or serious? You're going to make me choose? I don't know, it just felt right to do. At first I hated her.
She reminded me of my stepmother, all fussy and uptight. But maybe I should cut her some slack. Over on the bed lay the gold and white wedding dress, still spattered with blood, the hem caked in dust and spotted with acid stains. Nevertheless, Alex had smoothed it out very carefully, like it was something worth keeping.
Magnus, you had some reason to stop by?
Yeah. I found it hard to concentrate. I stared at the rows of pots all perfectly shaped.
You made all these last night?
I picked one up. Alex took it out of my hands.
No, you can't touch it, Magnus. Thanks for asking, Magnus.
Yes, most of these were last night. I couldn't sleep. The pottery, it makes me feel better.
Now you were about to say why you came over and then quickly get out of my hair?
I'm going to meet Sam in Boston. I thought
that I'd want to come with?
No thanks. When Sam is ready to talk, she knows where to find me. Alex marched back to the wheel, picked up a scraper, and started smoothing the sides of the trophy cup. You're angry with her. Alex kept scraping. That's a pretty impressive vase, I offered. I don't know how you can shape something that large without it falling apart. I tried to use a wheel in, like, fifth grade art class. The best I could manage was an off-center lump.
A self-portrait, then?
Ha-ha. Just saying, I wish I could do something this cool. No immediate reply, maybe because I hadn't left much room for a witty insult. Finally, Alex glanced up warily. You heal people, Magnus. Your dad is actually a helpful god. You've got this whole sunshiny, warm, friendly thing going on. That's not enough cool stuff for you? I've never been called sunshiny before.
Oh, please. You pretend like you're all tough and sarcastic or whatever, but you're a big softy. And to answer your question, yes, I'm mad at Sam. Unless she changes her attitude, I'm not sure I can teach her.
To resist Loki. Alex picked up a lump of clay and squeezed it.
The secret is, you have to be comfortable changing. All the time. You have to make Loki's power your power.
Like your tattoo. Alex shrugged.
Clay can be shaped and reshaped over and over. But if it gets too dry, if it sets, then there's only so much you can do with it. When it gets to that point, you'd better be sure it's in the shape you want it to have forever.
You're saying Sam can't change?
I don't know if she can, or even if she wants to. But I do know this. If she won't let me teach her how I resist Loki, if she won't at least try, then the next time we face him, we're all dead.
I took a shaky breath. Okay. Good pep talk. I guess I'll see you at dinner tonight. When I got to the door, Alex said,
How did you know?
I turned. Know what?
When you walked in, you said, Dude, how did you know I was male?
I thought about it. At first, I wondered if it had just been a throwaway comment, a non-gender-specific dude. The more I considered, though, the more I realized I genuinely picked up on the fact that Alex was male. Or rather, Alex had been male. Now, after we'd been talking for a few minutes, she definitely seemed like a she. But how I'd sensed that, I had no idea. Just my perceptive nature, I guess. Alex snorted.
Right.
But you're a girl now. She hesitated.
Yeah.
Interesting. You can leave now. Will you make me a trophy for my perceptiveness? She picked up a pottery shard and threw it at me. I closed the door just as it shattered on the inside. Chapter 56. Let's try this whole meeting for coffee thing again. Judging from the line of empty cups, Sam was on her third espresso. The idea of approaching an armed Valkyrie with three espressos in her system was usually not advisable, but I walked up slowly and sat across from her. She didn't look at me. Her attention was on the two raven feathers in front of her. It was a windy morning. Sam's green hijab rippled around her face like waves on a beach, but the two raven feathers didn't flutter.
Hey, she said.
It was a lot friendlier than get lost. Sam was so different from Alex, but there was something similar in their eyes, a sense of urgency churning just below the surface. It wasn't easy thinking about Loki's inheritance battling inside my two friends trying to take control. You got feathers, I noted. She touched the one on the left.
A memory.
And this one, she tapped the right. A thought. The ravens don't really speak. They stare at you and let you stroke their plumage until the right feathers drop out. So what do they mean?
This one, the memory, Sam ran a finger down the barbs. It's ancestral.
from my distant forefather, Ahmad ibn Fadlan ibn al-Abbas.
The guy who traveled among the Vikings. Sam nodded.
When I took the feather, I could see his journey like I was there. I learned a lot of things he never wrote about. Things he didn't think would go over well in the court of the Caliph of Baghdad.
He saw Norse gods, I guessed, Valkyries, giants,
and more. He also heard legends about the ship Naglfar. The place where it's docked, the eastern shores, lies in the border between Jotunheim and Niflheim, the wildest, most remote part of either world. It's completely inaccessible, locked in ice except for one day of the year, midsummer.
So that's when Loki will plan to set sail.
And that's when we'll have to be there to stop him.
I craved an espresso, but my heart was racing so fast I doubted I needed one. So what now? We just wait until summer?
It's going to take time to find his location, and before we can leave, we'll need to prepare. Train, make sure we can beat him.
I remembered what Alex had said.
I'm not sure I can teach her.
We'll make it happen, I tried to sound confident. What did the second feather tell you?
That's a thought, Samir said. A plan to move forward. To reach the eastern shores, we'll need to sail through the farthest branches of the world tree, through the old Viking lands. That's where giant magic is strongest, and where we'll find the sea passage to Naglfar's dock.
The old Viking lands. My fingers tingled. I wasn't sure whether it was with excitement or fear. Scandinavia? I'm pretty sure there are flights from Logan.
Sam shook her head. We'll have to go by sea, Magnus, the way the Vikings came here. Just as you can only enter Alfheim through the air, we can only reach the wild borderlands of the eastern shores through salt water and ice.
Right, I said. Because nothing is ever easy.
No, it's not.
Her tone was distracted, wistful. It made me realize I was being kind of insensitive. Sam had a lot of other problems going on besides her evil father.
How's Amir? I asked.
She actually smiled. In the wind, her hijab seemed to shapeshift from waves to grassy fields to smooth glass.
He's very good, she said. He accepts me. He doesn't want to cancel our engagement. You were right, Magnus. He's a lot stronger than I gave him credit for.
That's great. What about your grandparents and his dad? Samir laughed dryly.
Well, we can't have everything. They remember nothing about Loki's visits. They know that Amir and I have made up. For now, all is well. I'm back to making excuses about why I have to rush off in the middle of class or after school. I'm doing a lot of tutoring, she put the word in air quotes.
I remembered how weary she'd looked when I met her here 6 days ago. If anything, she looked more tired now. Something's gotta give, Sam, I told her. You're running yourself ragged.
I know, she put her hand over the feather of thought. I've promised Amir, once we recapture Loki, once I am sure that Ragnarok has been averted, at least for the present, then I'm done.
Done?
I'm retiring from the Valkyries. I'll devote myself to college, completing my pilot's training, and marriage, of course. When I'm 18, as we've planned.
She was blushing like, well, like a bride. I tried to ignore the hollow feeling in my chest. And that's what you want?
It's entirely my choice. Amir supports it.
Valkyries can resign?
Of course. It's not like being,
an Inherii, she meant. I was one of the reborn. I could travel the worlds. I had amazing strength and stamina. But I would never again be a normal human. I would stay as I was, the same age forever, or until Ragnarok, whichever came first. Certain restrictions may apply. Read your service agreement for full details.
Magnus, I know I brought you into this weird afterlife, she said. It's not fair of me to leave you, but...
Hey. I touched her hand just briefly. I knew that wasn't Sam's thing, but she and my cousin Annabeth were the closest thing I would ever have to sisters. Samira, I just want you to be happy. And, you know, if we can keep the Nine Worlds from burning before you leave, that would be nice too. She laughed.
All right then, Magnus. It's a deal. We'll need a ship.
We'll need a lot of things, actually. Yeah. Salt and ice seem to be making themselves at home in my throat already. I remembered our encounter in January with the sea goddess Ran. How she'd warned me that I would be in trouble if I ever tried to sail the seas again. First, we need advice, I said, about sailing across magical waters, fighting weird sea monsters, and not dying at the hands of a bunch of angry aquatic gods. Strangely enough, I know just the person to talk to.
Your cousin, Sam guessed.
Yeah, I said. Annabeth. Chapter 57. I call in some favors. Texting and calling didn't work, so I sent a raven. When I told TJ that I was having trouble getting in touch with my cousin, he looked at me like I was dense.
Just send a bird, Magnus.
Stupid me. I'd spent months in Valhalla not realizing I could rent a raven, tie a message to its leg, and send it to find anybody in the Nine Worlds. The whole thing seemed a little too Game of Thronesy to me, but whatever, it worked. The raven came back promptly with Annabeth's reply. We coordinated train rides and met halfway between Boston and Manhattan in New London, Connecticut. Annabeth was there before me, standing on the platform in jeans and sandals and a long-sleeved purple shirt with a laurel wreath design and the letters SPQRUNR. She hugged me until my eyeballs bugged out like Thringa's.
I was so relieved, she said. I never thought I'd be glad to see a raven at my window, but are you okay?
Yeah. I had to suppress a nervous laugh, because okay was a stupid word to describe how I felt. Also, it was obvious Annabeth was not okay either. Her gray eyes seemed heavy and weary, less like storm clouds today, and more like fog banks that couldn't quite lift. A lot to talk about, I said. Let's get some lunch. We got a table on the deck of the Muddy Waters Cafe. I suppose the place was named after the blues musician, but it seemed a little ominous considering the waters I was getting ready to sail through. Annabeth and I sat in the sunshine, ordered Cokes and cheeseburgers, and watched the sailboats heading out to Long Island Sound. It's been crazy in New York, Annabeth said. I thought communications were only down among demigods. I mean, my kind, the Greek and Roman, but then I realized I hadn't heard from you either. I'm sorry that didn't dawn on me sooner. Wait, why are communications down? Annabeth poked at the table with her forked tines. Her blonde hair was loose around her shoulders today. She seemed to be growing it out. It caught the sunlight in a way that reminded me of Sieve, but I tried to shake that idea. I knew Annabeth would destroy anyone who dared call her a trophy anything.
There's a crisis happening, Annabeth said. A god fell to earth as a human. These evil Roman emperors are back causing trouble.
Oh, so just the usual then. She laughed.
Yeah. Somehow these evil Romans found a way to mess up communication among demigods. Not just the usual magical kinds of talking, but also cell phones, Wi-Fi, you name it. I'm surprised your raven made it to me. I would have come to Boston to check on you sooner, but...
She shrugged helplessly.
I've had my hands full.
I totally get it, I said. I probably shouldn't be distracting you. You've got enough to deal with. She reached across the table and squeezed my hand.
Are you kidding? I want to help. What's going on?
It felt so good to tell her everything. I remembered how weird it had been the first time we'd compared notes. Her with the Greek gods, me with the Norse. We'd both left that day feeling like we'd overcharged our batteries and our brains were melting. Now, at least we had some kind of framework to build on. Sure, it was all still ridiculously crazy. If I stopped to think about it too long, I would start giggling like a lunatic. But I could tell Annabeth my problems without worrying that she wouldn't believe me. It made me realize how much Sam must appreciate being able to be totally truthful with Amir. I told Annabeth about Loki's escape and Sam's idea for tracking him down, about an icy harbor at the farthest borders of Jotunheim and Niflheim, or Scandinavia, whichever came first.
A boat trip, she said. Oh boy, that brings back painful memories.
Yeah, I remembered what you said about sailing to Greece and... Yeah. I didn't want to bring up all that horrible stuff again. She had cried when she told me about the things that had happened to her during their voyage, especially how she and her boyfriend, Percy, had fallen into some underworld place called Tartarus. Look, I said, I don't want to put any pressure on you. I just thought, I don't know, maybe you'd have some ideas, some pointers. A train rumbled through the station. My view of the bay flickered between the rail cars like an old, out-of-alignment reel-to-reel movie.
You say you have problems with sea gods, Annabeth said.
Yeah, Ran, this bag lady with a net. And I guess her husband hates me too now. His name is Aegir. Annabeth tapped her forehead.
I need more memory storage for all these names. Okay, I don't know how this works with multiple sea gods.
Are the Norse ones just in the north and Poseidon is in the south, or do they do, like, a timeshare program? I remembered an old cartoon with sheepdogs punching time clocks as they came in for different shifts to keep the wolves away from the flocks. I wondered if gods had punch cards like that, or maybe they all worked from home. Could sea gods telecommute? I don't know, I admitted, but I'd like to avoid getting all my friends drowned in a tsunami as soon as we leave Boston.
But you've got some time?
Until this summer, I said. We can't leave while the seas are frozen or something.
Good. We'll be done with school by then, finally graduated.
I don't go to school.
Oh, you mean we as in you and your boyfriend? Exactly.
assuming he passes his semester and does okay on his standardized tests, assuming these evil Roman emperors don't kill us all and destroy the world. Yeah, Loki would be seriously ticked off if Roman emperors destroyed the world before he got to start Ragnarok.
We should have enough time to help you. At least compare notes. Maybe call in some favors.
What favors? Annabeth smiled.
I don't know the ocean very well, but my boyfriend does. I think it's time you met Percy.
This is Kieran Culkin. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, Book 2, The Hammer of Thor, by Rick Riordan. This program was directed by Scott Sherritt, executive producer Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2016 by Rick Riordan. Production copyright 2016, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.